Well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Today we are sharing a recording of a recent Vinyl Guide live event where our special guests were Ahmet Zappa and Joe Vaultmeister Travers. Now, this is recorded in front of a live audience November 23rd, 2019 at Cream Tangerine Records in Costa Mesa, California. Now, Ahmet, Joe, and I discuss at length Frank Zappa's masterpiece, Hot Rats, which is currently celebrating its 50th anniversary with a vinyl re-release, a new book, a super extended 6-CD box set, and a super collectible Record Store Day Black Friday 10-inch picture disc featuring rare mono mixes of Peaches and Regalia, Little Umbrellas, and more. Now, I strongly urge each of you to snatch up one of these 10-inch Zappa picture discs on Record Store Day Black Friday, as they are in limited numbers, and also go over to Zappa.com and sign up for one of these Hot Rats vinyl bundles or box sets. I've seen them with my own eyes. I've held them in my hot little hands. These Hot Rats bundles are marvelously brilliant and a great gift for Zappa fans around the world. Now today, Ahmet and Joe discuss the making of Hot Rats. What was happening in Frank's life at the time? His separation from the Mothers, his production of other artists, why Hot Rats is so unique. We discuss the influence of Edgar Varese on Frank's work, and we go deep into a variety of Zappa-related projects, and Ahmet and Joe are extremely talkative and charming as always. And plus, if you want to hear more, don't forget we had both Ahmet and Joe on the show before. Episode 163 of The Vinyl Guide, where Ahmet and Joe spoke at length about The Vault, the tapes, the holy grails they believe are yet to be unearthed, and heaps more. That's episode 163 of The Vinyl Guide. And of course, we here on The Vinyl Guide constantly celebrate the music of Frank Zappa with many other Zappa-related episodes you can enjoy, including Dweezil Zappa, who was on the show episode number 94 of The Vinyl Guide. Moon Unit was on Vinyl Guide episode 109. Ex-Zappa drummer Ralph Humphrey was on episode 68, and going way, 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 way back, episode 16 featured Arthur Barrow talking about his time with Zappa and re-recording the rhythm tracks for We're Only in It for the Money. Now, we absolutely love our Zappa here on The Vinyl Guide, so please enjoy these episodes and heaps more at thevinylguide.com. By the way, I'd like to give a huge, huge big thanks and hug to all the folks that came out this night. Many diehard Zappa fans joined us at Cream Tangerine Records. It was a pleasure to see you all and meet most of you, and I appreciate you taking the time from your busy holiday schedules to spend the evening with us. I also want to thank our show sponsor, GrooveWasher.com. Get yourself the world's greatest record cleaner on earth. Get it for yourself or a friend for the holidays. There are bundles available at groovewasher.com. And look, here's a 10% off coupon. Enter promo code VINYLGUIDE10 at checkout for 10% off at groovewasher.com. That's 10% off everything groovewasher.com. Promo code VINYLGUIDE10. And now, without further ado, here is the Vinyl Guide live session with Ahmet Zappa and Joe the Vaultmeister Travers.
All right, well, the beautiful people are here, so that's good. All right. Thank you very much for coming out. My name is Nate, and I host a show called The Vinyl Guide, which I believe... Thank you. Tonight, we're going to be having a very special episode of The Vinyl Guide. We started having these Vinyl Guide live events in recent months. A while back, we had Keith Morris of Off and Black Flag and Circle Jerks, and that was fun. And a couple weeks ago, we had Bob Lefsetz on the show, and that was a very interesting conversation. And today, I'm very, very proud to be welcoming Ahmet and Joe to the stage as well. Of course, hey guys. Please.
Hello. Hi, all.
Now, a couple weeks ago, my son asked me, he said, who is your favorite musician? He knows that I love music, and it's always going in our house, and he asked me, what was my absolute favorite artist? And within an instant, it was Frank Zappa. And
good man.
Yeah, he was. I was lucky enough to discover him when I was young.
Me too.
Which meant I was able to get through the entire catalog.
Me too.
And these two gentlemen here are responsible for continuing that journey through the catalog. And so
it's a robust, never-ending supply of awesome.
Let's give a big round of applause to Ahmet and Joe for making it out here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
One of the things that's really out there right now is Hot Rats. It's the 50th anniversary for Hot Rats. Why is Hot Rats so special 50 years on?
For me, all my answers are kind of personal. That was a record that I've played probably as much as Apostrophe or Overnight Sensation. Those three records to me are very, very important for me personally. But I think, Hot Rats, in my opinion, if you look at the kind of music that was coming out, the releases that year, around that time, it was just so different. And I think that Frank, everything that he was probably going through with his band, he was disbanding the Mothers and set a new course for himself. Just musically, I think where he was coming from, what he was thinking about, it's an exceptional record. And that music, to this day, I think most people, if they think about Frank, Hot Rats is certainly in their consciousness, but Peaches and Regalia is a song that everyone kind of requests. It's an amazing composition.
Now, where was he at as an artist when he recorded Hot Rats? That was, correct me if I'm wrong, but aside from Lumpy Gravy, that was his first solo record,
yes.
Is that right? Yeah?
Yes.
And where was he at? Like, what was happening in his life at that time?
Well, he had another baby coming, right? And he had one of the first opportunities to work with studio musicians, right? Instead of the Mothers, even though on this box set there are sessions with the Mothers, scattered Mothers on there. But, and Gail told me that this was the album that really put Frank on the map as a guitar player, And there is an absolute, 1969 was an unbelievable year if you think about the stuff that he was doing. He was working on the Captain Beefheart record. He had just finished the Wild Man Fisher record. He had his own record company, blasting away, and his own records, which the stuff that he released that year were just monumental. If you think about Uncle Meat, and he was preparing Burnt Weenie Sandwich. It was an so prolific and so musically potent during that time, and the creativity was just ridiculous. There was so much happening. So as an artist, I think he was reaching an early peak, because there were so many different phases of his career, but 69 was like, things were changing, but in such a good way.
It seems like prior to that, he was with the Mothers, and they were a group. He was part of that group. Well, of course, he was always, out front of that group. But now he was going from Mothers to Frank Zappa as a solo artist. So that, to me, kind of reads that his confidence was coming. He was being more confident in his ability to produce. He's bringing on other artists. Do I have that right, or do you think he always had that?
I think it's also about his business acumen and, understanding, because he was rare in the sense that he was very cognizant of the money coming in and out. I think a lot of the artists at that time had business managers and other people that they would just kind of rely on. And my father was someone who was ingesting the information and making business decisions, as well as making creative decisions and composing music. So he's, I think looking at what was available to him, I just think that he was always a workaholic, but at this point, I just think the attention to detail and to try to do something in a bigger way that really, I just feel like it's a more personal record for him than what he was doing with the other band members, and I think that was probably liberating. So that's what I think is interesting about this record, is that it's a choice to get out in front and not really be a band, but singularly make a statement about his point of view, his musical compositions, and message out what was in his heart, in his mind, and express his creativity.
Okay.
Another thing. Hot Rats, at the time, was recorded on a prototype 16-track recorder. And having 16 tracks available, you know, at that time was obviously sonically superior, right? And so Frank took full advantage of it. And you can hear those layers in this music. You can tell that it had expanded, right? And that having that opportunity changed the sound of the music. And also, Frank was always blending different styles of music together. He was always very, it was really apparent. You can hear the doo-wop, you can hear the classical, you can hear all that stuff. But when people think that it has come to pass, okay, that Hot Rats was one of the records that kind of fused, because jazz was becoming electrified. It wasn't just all acoustic instruments and the age of electric music, electric instruments coming into the jazz world.
I just want to say for the people listening, because it's theater of the mind, Joe, you just did some superior jazz hands.
Did I?
Right now, as you were trying to demonstrate the unelectrified instrumentation of jazz.
Yeah.
I wish people could see your embarrassing jazz hands.
So historically, the fusion of jazz and rock, so to speak, this is one of the main first releases, such. So,
okay. Kind of. From a recording standpoint, you said he had 16 tracks, which was very rare at that point. He used multiple.
His mic isn't as hot as ours. Is there a way to turn him up a little bit?
Mm-hmm. We're looking after
Test
you, bro.
One, two.
There you go.
You want me to?
There you go. Yeah.
All right. All right.
Excellent.
I've found my voice.
How's that?
Okay. You sound so different and masculine now.
Yeah. So, jazz hands? No. So, with the 16-track board, that allowed him to multi-track drums, which I believe was a very new concept for Hot Rats, or for recording. Hot Rats was the first beneficiary of that. Is that correct?
Well, when you have 8 tracks to deal with, you record mono drums. You have all the different inputs, but you have to bring them down to a track or maybe two. And even still, with 16 tracks available, the drum tracks were just 2 channels, so it was a stereo, mm-hmm. stereo drums. Mm-hmm. He didn't go a little bit too crazy with the drums devoting too much of the track assignment, mm-hmm. because a lot of those additional track assignments went into overdubs and speed. If you listen very closely, Frank was always such a pioneer in the studio, and albums like Rolling It for the Money and Uncle Meat showcase his ability to do VSO stuff or mm-hmm. speed pitch variance stuff, and there's a lot of that on Hot Rats as well. So a lot of those extra tracks.
Him playing the bass, Hofner bass.
Exactly, sped up.
Yeah.
So all these different sound palettes are being introduced and fused together.
Mm-hmm. Now, for all these years, we've heard Hot Rats as the 6 tracks, the songs from the album, but now we've got the Hot Rats Sessions, which is 6 discs. What can we learn?
Warts and all, you know?
Yeah, what can we learn from that?
Well, for me, listening to it, I have a friend who is a big fan of that record in particular, and it's like, we'll come over and we'll listen to it. And I was just trying to cherry pick some of the moments that I liked. And for me, Frank was always such a pioneer in how he would edit the music. And at that time, this is pre-Pro Tools, so he was sitting there and making edits with a razor blade and splicing the audio together. So it's kind of unfathomable to me. It's such a handmade process, certainly for Frank, where he's playing the instruments and writing the music and in many ways pulling the best out of the players. And then, after he's listening and recording it, then making the edits. So what you get to see, certainly on this record, is a different, a window into how he made his choices, which is fascinating to me. And you get a real sense of the energy and the spirit of what was happening in the studio. And also what's interesting about this, the box set, is we were lucky enough, there's a photographer by the name of Bill Gubbins who became friends with my father in a pretty amazing circumstances. And My father invited him, he's 18, 19, young kid at the time, to come and snap pictures, which became the a lot of the album artwork. Is it's the behind the scenes of the making of Hot Rats, and we use a lot of the photography in the box set that you get. And Frank seems so focused and happy in a different way. So that's why earlier what I'm saying, I feel like it was a very liberating time for Frank. And it's an amazing sort of time machine, this box set. I think we're all really proud of it because I believe it's a seminal record in Frank's career, but just the archaeology and what we unearthed to put it together is pretty staggering.
So knowing Frank, he recorded a lot. I mean, his tape budget just for blank tape must have been tremendous. And it seemed like he always had tape going. Is there much that was left off of this box set?
Joe can literally tell you with specificity.
Not much at all. Right. Not much at all. We included as much as we could without it becoming too much of an intense listen. Like, oh, do I need to listen to four more false starts of this song? You know what I mean? So I tried to edit it together where you're getting the feel of how the compositions came together in a compact way, so that you're not just sitting there all day, because it can get a little boring if you listen to the same thing over and over, you know, or the musicians struggling to get it,
but
you know?
What I think is really special about all the hard work that Joe puts so much work and energy into, you know, all the releases, but this one in particular is you're there in the control room. You get to experience take after take. And by the way, each take that we're kind of selecting has so much, it's a musical buffet of awesome. So there's so much to really enjoy, but it really does place you back in time in the experience. This is one of the proudest releases that I've been lucky enough to be involved in. I'm really thrilled with it.
It looks fantastic. Joe was showing me the box earlier.
Yep.
I don't know if you have that handy or worth getting out right now, but I believe it comes 6 discs, book, a board game. What else? What else can people expect out of this?
Well, I can only talk about some of my favorite highlights musically, content-wise, and we can show the box off
sure.
Totally. I have to say this to you, though. One of the things that was most fun for me when putting it together, not only just some of the beautiful music that is in this thing. I mean, like some of the solo piano stuff that Ian plays is just weep material. And getting
cry.
And then hearing songs like 20 Small Cigars and Toads of the Short Forest. Now, these songs were released before, but they fade out so quickly, and it leaves you going, you know, what happens after that? I know there's more. Well, 50 years later, now you get a chance to hear what happens after that. Okay. And also, one last thing, which is really fun. When Frank would mix, what you do is you've got your 16 tracks going, and then you're mixing down to a quarter-inch tape. And the quarter-inch tape is rolling continually.
Mm-hmm.
And you're stopping and starting, and you're slating. You're saying, okay, this is Son of Mr. Green Jeans, inner cut, take one, and then roll it. And then once you get the mix, then Frank would take the parts out with a razor blade and edit it all together, and voila, right? Mm-hmm. But the out reels, you get to hear all the mixes in progress, and you get to hear Frank's slates. And what I did was, I took all the best slates and kind of placed them in disc 6 so that it gives you the feeling that Frank is literally presenting the material to the listener, which is really, really fun. And my favorite part of that is how disc 6 starts, because I found on the multi-track reels, before he was getting ready to do an overdub, he clears his throat and he lights a freaking cigarette, right? So I grabbed that, and if you listen very close on the disc of the start of disc 6, he clears his throat, lights a cigarette, and he does a needle drop on a Cucamonga acetate version of Little Umbrellas. Yes.
So it's really fun. I love when Joe, he's so passionate about Frank's music, and and I mean this respectfully for anyone who's a Zappa fan, and I use this term for myself, but I think Joe might be the king of the Zerds, which are Zappa nerds. Right?
Never so heard like, that one before.
You know, as a Zerd, like the king of the Zerds.
When you look,
I wish people had a camera, you could see Joe. You just lit up. And by the way, that's what I was trying to describe. That's what I think is unique about this experience. It is, I think, you know, Frank would always talk about his music as a movie for your ears. But this really is the documentary film for your ears of the making of Hot Rats, and it really, Joe, you did an amazing job.
Oh, thanks.
And I think it just sounds great.
Will do. And it looks like we have the box set right here.
Yeah, take a look.
Jeez, this thing is heavy.
So Andy Nathanson, what you're looking at for our listeners right now is an alternate photograph from the same sessions from you know, I think people are familiar with the album cover right. of Hot Rats, but these are moments before or after the photo that actually made it to the album cover. And I'm too drunk because I had too many cocktails before doing your show, but I forget the style of photography. This wasn't something that was actually colored in.
No. It's infrared.
That's what I was psychically trying to gather from the audience. Infrared film for the people that helped me out in the audience here. It's the photographer. Mm-hmm. It was a probably pretty expensive bit of film to buy and experiment with at the time, and all of the photos from that session are pretty phenomenal. So thank you so much, Andy.
Did he know, or the photographer know?
She.
Did she? Did Frank know what he wanted on the cover, or did he just see the picture and say, "That's what I want"?
That's how it went.
Yeah,
that's how it went.
He saw the picture. He spent some time with Andy. And he was just blown away by the photo. He really, captured, I think, what he was going for.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
But it would have been awesome to be a fly on the wall for that. You know, Andy talks a little bit about it. Her experience. I want to say in the it's not in here. It's in Hot Rats book. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah. There's the liner notes.
Hot Rats.
Yeah.
Book
the liner notes were written for this release by Andy. And Ian Underwood, and Matt Groening, and myself.
Matt Groening, Simpsons.
Yes.
Matt Groening,
yes.
And when does this ship, by the way?
It's coming out pretty soon. I just want to show people, when I was talking about Frank's happiness, first, you can just see from this picture just his intensity. It's pretty amazing, as I'm sharing this photo with the audience, pretty amazing to be able to see it. This close to the action, and then later on in here, like a job well done, listening in and on. It's sort of hard to describe. It's a lot of the pictures in here are pictures of Frank behind the console at Whitney Studios and also Sunset Sound, right, Joe?
Yes.
Laying down, maybe this is the solo. And what do we think this is the solo?
Son of Mr. Green Jeans.
Yeah. By the way, the alternate takes of the solos that didn't make it to the record are blistering.
Yeah.
They will set your minds and ears on fire. They're in fuego. They're so good.
Totally.
In this box set, I want to say it's probably the first time someone has ever dumb enough to do this. We made a board game that's very much in the style of one of my favorite board games I played as a child, Candyland. And just knowing how busy my father always was and thinking about this record, you can go on this kind of pretty fun trip trying to get Frank to the studio to finish Hot Rats. I encourage everyone to look at the detail of the board game and to play it, because I don't think you can finish the game rapidly. It will actually take you quite some time. So take out a nice bottle of Chablis, some maybe like a I don't know like a Nice whiskey. What are you? Are you a drinking man, my friend?
Yes, I am.
What's your beverage of choice?
I tend to go with a vodka and then stick with it for the whole night.
I can tell you right now that there's a vodka that I just recently had that's terrible. No offense to the makers of the vodka. It's kale. A kale flavored
vodka.
Kale flavored vodka.
That's where they went.
And you would think it would be great, but it's not. Or maybe you wouldn't think that it was great. Yeah. I never noticed it said kale when I read it after the fact. I'm like, I just bought kale vodka. What? I'm like, this isn't Silver Lake. I don't live in Silver Lake. I'm not cool enough to drink kale vodka. What the fuck? And it was not good.
It's pretty hard to mess up vodka, I think.
No, you actually, I think it was easy for them to do it because they added kale to it.
Effortlessly.
Yeah.
Now, from the board game, help Frank finish Hot Rats. Was the actual recording of Hot Rats difficult for him to finish?
No.
No?
No. He was probably super excited. The initial tracking was done at a famous studio now, TTG Studios, which Freak Out was recorded in and absolutely free. And Jimi Hendrix recorded there. A lot of classic stuff, Velvet Underground, Nico, that first album was recorded there. And that studio didn't last that long. In fact, these sessions were most likely, and I'm thinking very hard right now, but I'm pretty positive that these were the last times that Frank recorded at that studio. Yeah. And then all the overdubs happened at Sunset Sound on Sunset Boulevard and at Whitney. And Whitney was a studio that Frank was like always at. Mm-hmm.
And Sunset always. Sound, that's not, I have to ask Joe this because Joe is a Zerd and I'm barely a Zerd. So Sunset Sound, there was the band Green Jelly before, well they were Green Jello before, right. And then they had to change their name. But I remember going to that rehearsal space and recording studio on Sunset and walking, I remember going to Sunset Sound a lot as a kid, really, really early on. And I don't know if the rehearsal facility was also attached. I don't know if he would rehearse there or not. Could be two totally different structures. Both of them were on Sunset. Anyways, when I was there visiting Bill Manspeaker, I think, from Green Jello, you could still see Frank's writing on the wall and the other band members.
Sick.
And I was like, this is awesome. And I had these intense memories. I was so little going there. It was before Joe's Garage, before he had his own facility. When even I guess the first iteration of Intercontinental Absurdities, ICA, was on like Genesee and Sunset as well. Because I have these weird memories of that building, that structure.
By the way, we have a Black Friday release. That's
yes.
Right. That is a Peaches and Regalia 10-inch. What can you tell us about that, Joe?
We decided that we wanted to do a 10-inch picture disc in conjunction with the box set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun. It's beautiful, it's collectible, and it features the mono mixes of Peaches and Regalia and Little Umbrellas, which was going to be the promo single for Hot Rats.
Yeah.
Just a promo.
Mm-hmm.
And on side two, we included rhythm track mixes, vintage rhythm track mixes, which means just the rhythm tracks that Frank mixed himself as a reference. And you get to hear little extra parts and really cool shit. So here it is. It's really pretty.
Excellent. And there's a limited number of these for Record Store Day, Black Friday, yeah?
Yep.
All right, number one.
If you knew how stressed out Joe gets and excited at the same time, that just for a record store release, when it comes around, all right, it's like the war room. What are we gonna do? That's awesome. You know, it is kind of it's a very fun
is it stressful
day
for
in the
you?
Office
so
when that
fun.
Happens.
Is it stressful though?
It's only stressful when Ahmet just wants to do a different color vinyl than I want to do.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
No, it's not stressful at all, actually. The only thing that's stressful is trying to get this stuff finished in time because the pressing plants are under a massive deadline.
Right.
And as we know, vinyl is not perfect, and it's actually very hard to get it right. And if you get a test pressing back that's not happening, you have to literally redo the entire process, and sometimes we don't have the time to do it.
Right.
So that's what's really stressful.
When you guys were on the show last, we talked about Frank's record collection. And one question I've been meaning to ask is, there's a very famous record that he owned, Edgar Varese.
Yep.
One that he purchased as a boy. and really influenced his musical thinking. Does that record still exist in his collection? Does he have the original Edgar? Really? Okay. Joe's smiling and nodding.
It's
how
there.
Special is that record?
It's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, you think about how long ago that happened. Obviously, it's been played very many times, and the cover is, you know,
that's
thrashed.
One?
That one! Yes. I actually got this, too. Did you get... Is this the... yeah, I have this exact one. I bought it, too. It's so nice to see that a company has put this back in print, you know? And I've always wondered what their source tape was for this, if it even was a tape. Mm. But anyway, so Frank's version of this is completely trashed, but it is still there.
For those of you who don't know, he had very little money, goes into a record store, read about it first, discovered it at a Sam Goody, right? And... You know, it kind of breaks my heart thinking about, well, so he finds this record. He doesn't even have enough to pay for it. He barters with them. They ultimately sell him this record. And it was so transformative for him. But fast forward to his birthday, you know, because we grew up with so much. You know, I really can't even relate to this because we really wanted for nothing in our house. And if I think about my father's experience and in his mind, he sees this number on the back of the record. And
when he was maybe 10 or something
like that? Yes. His parents ask him what he wants for his birthday. And he just said, can I just make a long distance phone call? And he calls the record. He calls the number on the back to speak with his new hero. He's not there. But the good news is he called him back, and that, I really think, changed his life.
Absolutely. You know? This music absolutely changed his life. And for those of you listening, if you're interested in wanting a copy of this, it's very limited, but if you go online, the label is called Modern Silence. And so you too can have this record in your collection.
Yeah.
Probably very essential. Dig the sirens, as he said.
And yeah, Frank would talk about him as looking like this mad musical, you know, mad scientist. Yeah. And I look at this, and I don't see a mad scientist. So I think, you know, I can't. Mm-hmm. It's hard to put myself in. I tried to put myself in Frank's shoes and contextualize the time and what he was up against. Because my father was also someone that was colorblind. You know, he was working with so many different people at a time when a lot of people were racist or had judgments. And my father had none of those those things. And, you know, we were raised with those same values. And I would hear all these stories about, you know, how oppressive in many ways, what he would fight against. And, you know, if you take a 30,000-foot view, I mean, these are the things I think about when I'm trying to connect with my dad. You have a kid who is probably thought of as being abnormal, but really he's writing sheet music, you know, and trying to express himself differently and not fitting into a box that people wanted to put him in, and just because he pushed against those norms. It's fascinating to me.
Was it hard for him pushing against those norms?
No, I just think instinctively, sure, maybe it was hard for him. I don't know, but he was never deterred. He was someone who was going to do it because he had the passion, and you have to respect. Mm-hmm. That's a great life lesson for everybody. I mean, even as a parent now, I try to instill in my own children, because this is, you know, what was conveyed to me by example from my parents, is that if you put your mind to it and you have the passion, you can manifest your own destiny, and you can, you know, you can accomplish great things. But it takes hard work. It takes, you know, the energy, the focus, and you might have to do, you know, things that you might not want to do to make your dreams come true. It might take longer than, it just might take more time. But, you know, it's just, he was an amazing father. I miss him dearly.
I imagine you do. So I actually bought an extra one of these. So if someone in the crowd would like this, I gave this to give away.
Whoa!
Yes.
Heavy duty.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Let's think of a question of something.
Oh, we can do that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can do that.
All right.
Absolutely.
What do you think? What is the creature's name in the song Cheapness?
Bam.
There you go. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, that was quick.
Congratulations.
Too.
What's your name, sir? Joe?
Jim.
Jim.
Yeah.
Not Joe. But Jim.
Excellent.
Action Jim. Congratulations.
All right. Enjoy.
My new friend Aloysius out there, who's also a tiger in Chinese astrology, making some new friends out here in Costa Mesa, living the dream in Costa Mesa right now for this podcast.
Yeah. He was pretty quick. Yeah. So the family home was sold a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I believe Lady Gaga was the purchaser of the house.
Can neither deny nor confirm your accuracy.
How does that rumor sit with you?
In a hypothetical world where you envision, first you wake up one day after you've become an orphan, and you get all this paperwork that's very... it's just a new reality, and you learn that, we have been instructed, we have to sell our family home. So you're like, okay. We could take another whole podcast to talk about that stuff. But so in that scenario, certainly my responsibility waking up after my mother's passing to find out that I'm, a co-trustee of the family business. I had to learn a lot. I have learned a lot. It's a very robust business that is a family business. It's sort of like not sexy to talk about the business side because all the creativity is so fun. But you wind up talking to so many lawyers, and it's in this new reality that I found myself in. And realizing, all right, well, if we have to sell it to someone, I swear on the Necronomicon, I swear to the Dark Lord that I had one person that I thought, well, she's Italian, she's really interesting, super creative, in my opinion, and I just, I'm someone who believes in manifesting your, positive outcomes. I was like, if I had one sort of wish, if it was going to go to someone who I thought would truly appreciate the house, my dream was really Lady Gaga getting it. And I can neither deny nor confirm that happened.
Okay. Do you have visitation rights to the house?
No.
No, okay.
No. Right. No. It is really strange to... I moved out when I was 18, so I would just go up to visit my mom, right? But when you have these big life changes, when you lose your mom, your dad, and then, you... At least for me, I had such a huge responsibility to make sure that the entire family was protected and that... people probably don't know this, but my mother was in this lawsuit for a long time to get all the music back from Warner Brothers, and it was just a very expensive journey to be able to accomplish that for the family. And my mother called me before she passed to say, like, look, I can't fight for my life and fight for the family business. I had to, I was able to not only financially help, but really, if anyone in my family ever called me and said, I need help, I'm going to drop everything and do it. And certainly for my mother. And, it's kind of surreal. It's still strange. I don't know how it would feel to go back, because it was happening so fast after the fact, because this is like the gross part, I guess. If for those of you who still have your mom and dad, call them, tell them that you love them, get over any bullshit you might have. if you can. That's, you know, what I would hope for all of you. You know, it just, I don't know where I'm going with what I'm talking about, but it was a really emotional time, and I know that someone is making new, powerful memories there. Hopefully, making amazing music there, because that's what happened when Frank was there. Mm-hmm. You know, so many amazing, unbelievably artistic, groundbreaking, fighting for artist rights. You know what Frank did? That was the place that was his battery. You know, if Frank was the Green Lantern, as I like to think of him, you know, or the Norrin Rad, if you're a comic book nerd like I am as well, Norrin Rad was the Silver Surfer, and he wielded the power cosmic. But if you're a fan of the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, you know, Brightest Day and Darkest Night, no evil shall escape my sight. For those who worship evil's might, but beware my power, Green Lantern's light. Anyways, I hope I got that right. So, you know, for him, home, family was very important, and it would recharge his batteries. Mm-hmm. But you just, I cannot contextualize for you how much he cared about artists' rights, other artists, whether they liked him or not was irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad is just a great example of, you know, for someone who had his own opinions, stuck to his guns, and I think if he didn't get sick, he'd be fighting right now to become president of the United States.
Yeah. And I'd vote for him.
Yeah. So would I. I'd be helping with a campaign.
Yeah.
I'd be like, who wants a burnt weenie sandwich?
Now, does the Zappa, is it still the Zappa Family Trust, the unit? Is that kind of what it's called?
Yeah, well, it's the Zappa Trust.
Zappa Trust.
And it's me, my little sister, my older brother, and my older sister. You know, we are all, you know, the grateful, you know, beneficiaries of our father's legacy.
Are there any recordings that are out there that are not of your father that are not part of that Zappa family? Or was he successful in bringing all those back into the control of the family?
Oh, what is it, 35% maybe through the vault? I mean, there's so much work. And we're at plus 100 plus releases. Right. So he was someone who recorded, you know, so much media, and
he was on Verve, he was on Warner, he was on a few different labels. So all those things have been pulled back into the
That stuff happened.
Those were old lawsuits,
right?
Yeah,
you know, very old. You know, first wave.
The one thing that I'm hopeful to do is do something really special around 200 Motels, the feature and the soundtrack. That's been something that, you know, we've made some overtures to folks at MGM to do something special, because it's not this year, it's the following year, right?
Yeah, 71 is when it was released, so 2021.
Yeah.
You're 50 years old.
But I only say that because that was something that I was just aware of not kind of being in...
Right.
You know, in the family business, but they're so great at MGM. But we have the best partner, really, in the world with UME. They have been, you know, Bruce Reznikoff, Tim, who's here, who's, you know, helped organize us even, you know, coming here to be on your show. That really is at least my approach, and I think the approach of all of us on the Zappa side, is to just be totally open and, you know, to try and communicate and have a true partnership with Universal. And they've really risen to the challenge, and I think have been helping us to have more people, you know, experience Frank. I mean, you know, this is what we're doing here for this box set, the Hot Rats, while we're even talking about the 50th anniversary. You know, they care enough to allow us to, you know, make some pretty interesting, I think, box sets that,
yeah,
you know, we're in a world where a lot of physical product doesn't get this kind of treatment. We've been able to hornswoggle them into believing that we know what we're doing. And
there's always something special along with the, in these Zappos box sets. Here you got a board game. Mm-hmm. Halloween, you had the mask. You've always got some sort of unique spin on it. Now, if we start to look at things like Chunga's Revenge, going into the future, is there that much extra material for those recordings as well?
Chunga's Revenge is a hard one because it is created from so many different sessions, right? Like scattered amongst. So that one's a little harder to do. This one was an easy one because
I feel like that's kind of like a fucking challenge that's just been thrown. Who am I right now? It's your turn to do.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of Chunga's Revenge. I can't do it. That's it, Joe. You're on blast now, bro.
Don't worry. We're going to rock. But this one was easy because there was so much done in such a little bit of time, and it was a very focused session, right? So that's
is it all, made it easy. Is it also because the tapes magically were what was written on the outside of the box was actually what was in the box?
Yeah.
That's always helpful.
Yeah, you don't know how many times I run into
how
that.
How much stuff is unlabeled? Like, how much is...
Everything's labeled. But that doesn't mean that what's inside the box is what is labeled, you know? So it's a little bit of a needle in a haystack sometimes.
I don't know why, but the Jeffersons theme song plays in my head when I walk down the endless aisles of content where I'm like, bum, bum, bam,
bum, bum, bam. That's Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son?
Yeah. Well, Sanford and Son, forgive me.
Moving on, so like,
yeah, it's my bad. So, like, I got Sanford and Son playing in my head, bum, bum, bam, pulling something down, like, what's going to be in here? Is what's in the box going to reference what's on the outside?
Yeah.
And I seem to pull down tapes that Joe's organized and put back in their proper glory.
Has Frank's music ever been sampled in rap?
I mean, yes, not authorized, but, you know, it's happened.
Yeah. And licensing in movies and things like that? Is that...
Sure, yeah. That happens... you know, here and there.
Have you ever seen the movie E2 Mama Ten Bien?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the final credits on that one is Watermelon and Easter Hay.
Alfonso Cuarón is a big, big, you know, Frank fan, and I believe he made the entire cast of that film almost exclusively listen to Frank while making E2 Mama Ten Bien. So,
yeah.
You have a question?
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you, when you mention your dad, why do you mention him by his first name?
So, I don't know how this happens because my parents introduced themselves to me as Frank and Gail. So I never called them mom or dad. So I try to only contextualize the fact that it was my mom or dad to make people understand that. But normally I would just only ever call them Frank or Gail. And my wife doesn't understand. And I don't quite know why my son and my daughter, not so much, but my son is just calls me Amit. Right. I think it might be a biological thing. But no, I never called them mom or dad. I tried to give my mother a nickname that didn't really work out. She didn't like any of that stuff. I used to call her it made sense to me at the time. Goof Meef. And I would take her pinky and her pointer finger, and I would sing jingles while I would pull them like they were udders from a baby goat. So, does that help? But this was, by the way, my normal. But my mother was someone who, and my father, naming something was an unbelievable experience in the house. If we got an animal, we would take a lot of time trying to figure out what kind of epic name could it have. And we've had some real zingers, like Sakuji.
Toaster.
Toaster, Bing Jang, the Gweech. I would take the Gweech and I would put the Gweech, I would balance the Gweech over my forearm and bounce the Gweech, and it would just totally mellow out. And we would all sing, "You are the power Gweech, you are the power Gweech, you are the power, power Gweech, power Gweech." And this was a sad memory of the Gweech, is my father loved this cat, and this cat was never grew to be, you know, much bigger than really a kitten-sized cat, and couldn't have weighed more than 2 pounds. And when my dad was really sick, he couldn't even deal with the weight of the Gweech on his chest. And the only thing that the Gweech wanted to do was to spend time with Frank. So that was a shitty experience. I'm like, come on, Gweech, come out of there. You know, that was fucked up. Thanks for bringing me down with your fucking question about why I only ever called my fucking dad Frank. You son of a bitch.
And on that high point, what I'd like to do is thank Ahmed and Joe for joining us here tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway.
Thank you, Nate.
The Hot Rats box set is coming out. It'll be available for
December 20th.
December 20th. All right, so it'll be there right around Christmas. Now, there's the Hot Rats Sessions, which is a 6-disc set with booklets and game and all sorts of interesting stuff. A couple of essays from Joe, Matt Groening. Who else was on that?
Ian Underwood and Andy Nathanson.
Excellent.
And then we'll also have a anniversary edition of the original album, Hot Pink Translucent Vinyl, which will be really fun.
And all
also what's included in there is totally fictitious, imaginary mountains of cocaine. Okay. Doesn't exist.
No.
You can open it up, you can't find it. In your imagination.
All right. And the Black Friday 10-inch record, which is available...
Yep.
Record store day. Whoop, where did it disappear to?
It's behind that thing right there. No, inside of it. Inside of it. There
I'm
you go.
I'm not trying to steal it. I swear.
I think you lost power to your microphone.
Did I?
Yeah. Here.
Okay.
This one's hot, man.
Ooh. All right. We're falling apart here. All right. So the 10-inch Black Friday Peaches and Regalia mix. On what is it? Black Friday record store day, November 30th. I want to say. Anyway, rush out and grab one of these limited numbers. And again, thank you, Joe and Ahmed, for joining us here. And again, we really appreciate you continuing to put this music out. As a Frank Zappa fan, lifelong Zappa fan, seeing the work that's coming out now and the acceleration of the recordings that are happening is brilliant. And please keep doing it, because we love it.
Thank you for having us.
No worries.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming out. A little thing, I know the show's over, but for those of you who don't know, I'm going to read a quote on the back. So this is where the name came from. This is from Frank. "That's where I got the idea for the title for the Hot Rats album. There's a recording that I picked up in Europe that had The Shadow of Your Smile with Archie Shepp playing on it, and he played this solo that just sounded to me immediately like there was this fucking army of preheated rats screaming out of his saxophone. That's what it sounded like."
Wow.
So now you know the origin of Hot Rats.
I thought it was Beefheart that was just kind of riffing and said some Hot Rats. No, that wasn't it? Oh, far out.
Thanks, guys. My microphone's gone limp.
Now, I also want to make sure that we thank Parker at Cream Tangerine. I tell you, part of the joy of doing this podcast is we get to visit these record stores all over the world. And really, the independent record store is just such a heartbeat of the music industry, and is the reason we have memories of Frank's music and countless other artists as well. And so having a shop like Cream Tangerine, this is one of my top five in Southern California. Whenever I come in, I love visiting this shop. So anyway, Parker, thank you and to the team for putting this on.
Thank you, bud. Nice to meet you.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Well, that was awesome. Again, thanks everyone for coming out to Cream Tangerine on November 23rd for this Vinyl Guide live session. Thanks to Ahmet and Joe and Team Zappa for making this happen. And everyone who's listening, have a great Record Store Day Black Friday. Don't forget to grab one of those limited edition collectible 10-inch picture discs. And we look forward to seeing your loot online. Tag us on Instagram or Facebook at hashtag Vinyl Guide or tweet us at The Vinyl Guide. Enjoy, and we'll be back with a brand new episode shortly. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.